This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. It's Tuesday, the 3rd of June. I'm Alec Hogg, and here's your BizNews briefing. Albert Einstein said that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different outcome. Sometimes I wonder whether we in South Africa, certainly on the economic side, are not to be accused of exactly that. The ANC is doubling down on its BEE policies, even though we know they haven't worked, even though we've had 17 years of economic growth that has been lower than population growth. That is a recipe for disaster. If your young people don't have an opportunity to get into the job market, well, they don't have a future. So you can educate them as well as you might, and we aren't very good at that either. But whatever happens, if they do not have opportunities when they finish their education, you get social unrest. It's just a matter of time. There's another area, however, where the ANC is once again doubling down on disastrous policies, and that's in the mining sector. I spoke recently to the Democratic Alliance's James Lorimer, who's been very close to this story. He is the spokesman on mining for the party.
The mining industry is not in a good place. Last year, tax revenues that they paid to government just about halved, and the same with mineral royalties. The mining industry is struggling. So what do you do when the mining industry is struggling? What you should do is you should improve the conditions and make it easier for them to operate so that they can make their businesses more sustainable and so that you can attract more mining businesses into the industry. What do they do instead? They make it more difficult. Because I think their starting point is completely wrong. They think that we have this unimaginable treasure trove of minerals, which to a large extent we do, and that we can dictate the terms for anybody because no matter what terms we set, people will always be coming here desperate to set up businesses here to take those minerals out. Well, that's not really true across most of the industry. There are a few parts of the industry which are very rich and very productive, and you can set tough conditions because people will still want to mine. But so many other parts of the industry are just not worth it. People will go elsewhere. And they do.
Just take us through the Fraser Institute. I've kind of followed it over the years. It is a rating of the more attractive mining destinations in the world. How does South Africa rank there at the moment?
Increasingly badly. We're in the bottom 10 of the desirable mining jurisdictions. Fraser is seen as the gold standard, although it does just measure impressions. But that's, after all, what investment decisions are built on. And if people's impression is that South Africa is a terrible place to put your money, then they won't put their money there. And that's what's been happening. Our desirability as a place to start new mining ventures has been going steadily downward. And we're in the bottom 10 of the roughly every year the target changes slightly, but probably close to 100 mining destinations that they look at. And the top places are places like Australia and Canada, and we're now firmly towards the bottom.
I guess the problem with all of this, being in the bottom 10, is that you need to encourage people to make long-term investments. What will get us out of the bottom 10, or how long will it take to get us in a place where guys do? Because when you're putting a hole in the ground, when you're putting a mine, it can take up to a decade to bring it into production.
Oh, at least. More often it's 15 or 20 years from exploration to profit-making production. And so it's a really weird business because you need enormous amounts of capital to start a big mine. And, you need then certainty that at the end of that 15 or 20 years, you're going to be able to get a return on your capital. And so it has to be quite a big return because of all the time that capital has been tied up. And when you have laws which are bad laws for a start, they curb your profitability. And what's worse and what's not talked about perhaps enough is how badly the laws are applied. You know, we have all these laws, and yet to get these various permissions takes months, times, even years. And so you sit around waiting for your mining license of one sort or another, and you just wait on the department, and they don't tell you what's going on often, and you just sit there. So nobody wants their capital tied up. If you want to invest, you want a return. And if you are prepared to sink it into a long-term project, you want certainty that that return will happen. But all that seems to happen here is that we get worse and worse legislation, which make it more and more difficult to make a profit. And is it any surprise that there are very few, perhaps no large-scale mines which are going to be coming on stream in the next few years? I mean, there's a couple of sort of holdovers which are reaching the end of that 15, 20-year cycle, and they're coming on. But no big ones are starting.
You know, for about the last 10 years that I've covered the national budget in South Africa, I've always, with the presentation afterwards, the webinar afterwards, put up what I called, here's the dirty picture of South Africa, the dirty truth. And that was the debt that is being accumulated for future generations by the bad policies of the government. Because if you don't grow the economy, you cannot keep the wheels rolling without borrowing money. And we're borrowing from future generations about 20% a year of, well, certainly paying 20% of the taxes that are being brought in just on the government debt. And then the government debt keeps rising. So all of this is making a very toxic conclusion. And yet we keep doing it. We keep doing it. We don't have a look at why we're in a bad state, why the economy is not growing, why we have record unemployment, why we don't have jobs for youngsters coming out of schools, which jobs mean hope, etc. And it just baffles my brain that in a democracy like ours, where there is so much good, that we can have this blind spot when it comes to the most important thing. But I suppose the good news is we are talking about it now. The Uber truths are being aired. And indeed, those who have had a free ride for many, many years are now being brought to account. The Republic of No Consequences suddenly seems to be bringing in consequences, not least from the world superpower, the United States. And that fracas in the White House, in the Oval Office, when Donald Trump hosted Cyril Ramaphosa, it won't die down. The my colleague Chris Staines spoke yesterday with retired Colonel Chris Wyatt, who's become a pretty famous intelligence expert in these parts. He is an American, and he gave an update on the way many in America are now feeling about South Africa after the disaster in the Oval Office.
Actually, I want to ask you what you have made of President Cyril Ramaphosa's utterances since his return from Washington.
Well, I'm very disappointed in President Ramaphosa. I made a video before I left South Africa when I was in the Western Cape, because I'd seen that Rob Herzog had made a video imploring President Trump to take some action vis-a-vis South Africa to improve the situation. I made a video imploring the South African delegation to not do certain things when they went to the U.S., including lecture Donald Trump. And that's exactly what they did. They did all the things I asked them not to do. So I'm incredibly disappointed at the actions of President Ramaphosa and also Dean McPherson from the Democratic Alliance, who cackled like a hyena when Ramaphosa told the joke about the lights being dimmed and mocking President Trump. Dean McPherson thought it was funny. To the credit of the security detail that was with President Ramaphosa and McPherson, they kept stone cold faces. And that's what Dean McPherson should have done. It was inappropriate to laugh about the torture and murder of people that is so callously dismissed. And President Ramaphosa then telling jokes about it when he was at the podium was really unfortunate. I'm very disappointed. I'd hoped that South Africa would take this seriously, but obviously the politicians in South Africa don't think that they need anything from the United States, and they can say what they want and do what they want. And they're welcome to do that. South Africa is a sovereign country. But if you think it comes without consequences, then you're delusional. And I think that the ruling government of National Unity thinks there's no consequences for their actions. And I think they're going to be sadly disappointed very soon. There was a farm attack last week in Brits, and unfortunately, it's the mother and the stepfather of a dear friend of mine. They were savagely assaulted on that farm in Brits, beaten with an antique iron, tied up. He's an elderly, wheelchair-bound man, tied up. They poisoned their dogs a few days before the attack. Then they stole the tires off their Bakis the next night, off their Bakis so they couldn't escape or get away. And then they broke in at 2 o'clock in the morning, tied up this elderly couple, beat them with inch of his life, and then left the scene, just taking a television. And that was about it, so that it could be categorized as a house robbery. And the reason I'm mentioning this is how crime statistics are bogus in South Africa. So when the police came, I have a copy of the police report. It's reported as a house robbery. The man, they attempted to murder him. And I have the sad news to tell you today that they did murder him. He died early this morning from the grievous assault that occurred last week. So now it's a case of murder. But the police in their crime statistics have listed as a house robbery, not a farm murder. And this is reprehensible. This is why crime statistics in South Africa are not trustworthy, and why people should look at this with a jaded eye every time you hear somebody like Dan Korter or Justice Malala or a South African politician tell you that only, or Senzo Nkunu tell you, the police commissioner, that only one white farmer is murdered. They cover this up. That doesn't make white people special. Doesn't make black people any less important. All lives matter. All murders should be addressed. All should be reported. But this is being covered up, and it's time that someone tell the truth and expose this. This is not a house robbery. At a minimum, it was aggravated assault. It was trespassing. It was a home invasion and a robbery at a minimum. And now it's a murder case.
And you know what just baffles me? I know Ramaphosa says often, oh, I'm baffled by this and I'm baffled by that. Well, what baffles me is that they think that the truth does not get back to the critics of our country. It's just like, well, you say it and then it will be so. The world is as it is, not as you want it to be. Colonel Chris Wyatt is incredibly well connected. He is well known in the United States. And I can tell you, picking out a situation like this, where it's a dear friend of his father and mother, just reminds me of what Retief Goosen said in the White House when he was asked by Donald Trump, you know, what's going on? Your brother's a farmer. How's he finding things? Amen. You can't hide these things. Just come into the open, talk about it. Let's discuss it. Let's address it. Denial is not just a river in Egypt. Well, moving on, hopefully to something that's a little more interesting or a little less controversial, although I wouldn't bet on it. You might have watched on BizNews TV recently that there's a small mining company called Mantengu, and its chief executive, Mike Miller, has been making all kinds of allegations, primarily that his share price has been manipulated by people who want to kibosh a deal that Mantengu is putting together with a company called Blue Ridge Mining. So the whole story is these guys are pushing down the share price of Mantengu so that it pushes the transaction into another category, which means that they then have to have a special general meeting of shareholders, which might not approve at that point in time. So that's the background to this. Paul O'Sullivan, ACE investigator, has been pulled into this story because somebody that he has worked with in the past, Zunaid Moti, a colorful, controversial character, was pulled in from Mantengu as part of the alleged manipulators of the share price. I spoke to O'Sullivan yesterday. The full interview is on BizNews TV. It gives the other side of a story which has now developed into a 250 million rand slander court case against Mantengu. Where it all ends, who knows? But O'Sullivan, his investigations have provided some very useful information. At the center of all of this, the CEO of Mantengu is alleging that his former financial director has been the person responsible for generating all of the trouble. Let's listen to Paul.
We've analyzed the ex parte application, and I'm fairly certain, of course, you know, we don't act for any of the parties involved in the ex parte application, but the reason we've analyzed it is because it flowed from that Mantengu have made these allegations of share price manipulation, and they've pointed fingers at a number of individuals, including a chap by the name of Ulrich Bester, They subsequently, by the way, not just Ulrich Bester, they alleged that certain members or officers, if you like, of the JSE were involved in either assisting in the share price manipulation or covering it up by refusing to investigate the matter. Now, we looked into that possibility, and with the information that's publicly available, we satisfied ourselves that there were no members or officers of the JSE that were involved in assisting Ulrich Bester to carry out any share price manipulation. Additionally, I interviewed Ulrich Bester myself, and being an expert on body language and looking people in the eyes and asking them pointed questions, I satisfied myself that Ulrich Bester is also not engaged in any share price manipulation. Now, when you apply for these orders, you have to acknowledge to the court that you are being forthright and honest and ethical in everything that you're saying to the court. And I think that is the weakness that Mantengo have, because they brought an application to the court and they made certain comments. And when they made these comments, they knew that what they were saying to the court wasn't strictly true, which means they haven't taken the court into their confidence. Now, if you tell a court that the conduct of this share price manipulation is intended to affect a transaction that you have going on at that moment in time, and in this particular case, they're talking about the transaction they had with the purchase of a mine called Blue Ridge. And they made it clear in that High Court application that, in fact, the conduct of the share price manipulator, which they said was Ulrich Bester, was intended to disrupt their purchase of the Blue Ridge mine by changing the nature of the investment, because the reduced share price of Mantengo would have changed it to what's called a Category 1, which would have resulted in them having to call a special general meeting of the shareholders because of the purchase price of the mine. But the reality is they knew at all material times that, in fact, they were buying that mine for a token price of 100 rand. Now, you don't have to call a special general meeting if you're going to buy a mine for 100 rand.
A token price of 100 rand. So what Paul is saying, his investigations have shown, was that there was no incentive for anybody to manipulate the share price down, and certainly not on the basis that it's going to change the transaction and make it difficult for them to do this, for Mantengo to do the acquisition. We'll find out. This thing's going to court. There's no question on that, or, well, certainly it looks like it that way. But my goodness, the allegations and the muck that's been thrown around, the mind boggles. Well, on to the international front, and earlier today there was some good news. The fight that's going on between the United States and China might not be continuing indefinitely or for very much longer. Donald Trump is wanting to meet, or at least talk to, President Xi. Here's our partners at Bloomberg.
Well, Sherry, speaking of China, the White House says President Trump is likely to speak this week with the Chinese leader Xi Jinping as the two economies remain locked in trade turmoil.
I can confirm that the two leaders will likely talk this week. And as always, when there are foreign leader calls, we will provide a readout of those calls. So we'll see you guys later. Thank you.
Let's bring out China correspondent Min Min Lo, who joins us out of Hong Kong. And Min Min, it's not a guarantee. No date specifics have been announced from the U.S. We haven't even heard from China yet, and especially not since, you know, a pretty fervent reply from the Ministry of Commerce accusing the U.S. of breaking the agreement that was reached in Geneva.
That's right, Heidi. This morning I was just scanning Chinese media and I haven't seen a single article mentioning the prospect of a U.S.-China call between President Trump and President Xi. So the discourse in China is very different from the focus of public discussions in the U.S. right now. And it does seem like it is the U.S. administration that is more keen in pushing for a call this week. President Trump saying that he will be able to settle many of these disputes and tension in a phone call. But of course, from the Chinese side, we know from tradition that they tend to favor having lower level officials negotiating key issues before culminating in a leaders call, only when there are some expected outcomes that they are quite clear will be able to be achieved.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Well, the other big news of the moment is Elon Musk, who's now left the US government. He believes he's done a great job, and his supporters do, on what was called DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, also to do with his Dogecoin. I suppose there's some relationship there, but leave that for another time. There is a celebration going on amongst Tesla shareholders, not least Dan Ives, who's one of the cheerleaders. He works for a asset management company called Wedbush, and Bloomberg caught up with him last night.
Obviously, the leader's back, right? I mean, Musk is Tesla, Tesla is Musk, but I believe it's really about autonomous. I mean, I think as we go into Austin in June, you go into the robotics future, that's going to be a key part of the value of Tesla. It's how we get to a $2 trillion valuation. But when you look at Europe, you look at U.S., you look at China, and I think Musk is going to start to turn that around. And I think that's where investors are starting to factor in, you know, not necessarily what's happening next month or two, but a rebound second half of the year.
Okay, so stomach for the near term, these probably remaining poor numbers. The new refreshed Model Y isn't cutting it, it seems. It is more the political backlash. But you think ultimately the technology is going to outweigh a brand issue that they've had?
Yeah, I mean, look, me and you have talked about it before. I believe 90% of the future value is autonomous and robotics. Now, look, in terms of margins, delivery, growth, that's obviously very important to near-term numbers. But I do believe Street's factoring in. You start to see a rebound second half of the year. You have a recommitted Musk, clearly. And I think when you look to the future, I mean, this along with NVIDIA, I believe the most disruptive technology companies in the world. And then who's driving the software piece? Of course, it's Palantir.
NVIDIA, Palantir, Tesla, those are the stocks that Dan Ives reckons you should be holding. If you didn't quite follow all of that, because these guys do like to talk in their own special language, essentially what he's saying is that the real story for Tesla is driverless cars, what they call autonomous. And in particular, those driverless cars then being applied to taxis. So you have a taxi without a taxi driver in it. That's the future. And Tesla is apparently ahead in that area. They've been running these driverless taxis around Austin, Texas for some months already, apparently very successfully, and they will be unveiling that to the public in the next couple of months. And still with Elon Musk, well, he's about to raise money for a business that once was regarded as Musk's folly. When he bought Twitter for $42 billion, he tried to get out of it a few times before the deal was consummated. Many felt that Musk had made a terrible mistake. Well, he's injected his artificial intelligence operation called XAI, and suddenly Twitter's worth almost three times, or the enlarged Twitter, almost three times what Musk paid for it. Here's our partners at the Financial Times, whose Mark Filippino summed it up this morning in the FT News briefing.
Elon Musk's AI company XAI is launching a $300 million share sale. That's according to people close to the situation. The goal is to affirm the company's current valuation of $113 billion. XAI got that price tag in part because it acquired the social media company X in March. Users can access XAI's product Grok through X. Sources tell the FT that XAI is also trying to borrow $5 billion through a package of loans and high-yield bonds. That deal is being led by Morgan Stanley. This is all happening as Musk is stepping back from his role in the U.S. government. He said he's going to focus more on his businesses.
I want you just to ponder this as we say goodbye. XAI, so it's Twitter plus Elon Musk's artificial intelligence operation, is valued at $113 billion. That is roughly one-third of the value of the total South African economy. And he's South African. Till the next time, cheerio. This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.